Clever is right.
Yeah, and he was, I think his family originally came in from Canada.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
Say something.
Were they Matt?
Matt Himsel, yeah. Count to ten.
Hmm?
Count to ten.
Oh, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
This is Bob Brown, and I'm interviewing Jack Schiltz at his home in Billings. Jack served in the state legislature in the 51 and 53 sessions and was also a CONCON delegate. Good morning, Jack, and thanks for participating in this Mansfield Library interview for the Historical Archives. Can you tell me a little bit about yourself, where you were born, and a little bit about your roots, and what got you interested in politics?
Sure. Well, let's see. I was born in Kremlin, Montana. And not many people know where Kremlin, Montana is, but it's 25 or 30 miles west of Havre on the High Line. My Irish grandparents came from Ireland, County Mayo, and they homesteaded in the Sweetgrass Hills. Their name was MacHale, M-A-C-H-A-L-E. my Luxemburger grandparents came from Luxembourg, and my father homesteaded in North Dakota and met my mother in Havre after the family in Havre had the MacHales were a hard luck outfit. They were early in the hills, early enough to homestead. They had a couple thousand acres. Do you care if I go on like this?
No, it's fine.
Had a couple thousand acres up there. And one brother started, he was the oldest one, he was Austin MacHale. And he got the first homestead. And then he had his brother come out, and that brother was struck by lightning working his cattle, and so he sent for the rest of the family to come out, and they all picked up homesteads.
He was killed by the lightning?
Yeah. Huh. And then Austin, that was Michael who was killed by the lightning. Austin got appendicitis, and on the way to the hospital, he died on the way to Havre, and then the family broke up in the hills. They kept the homestead, and I've forgotten the name of the man who rented it, but he was a good renter. And about the time of World War II, they sold it to him. He kept the mineral rights and still get a little royalty from that. I grew up in Kremlin until I was 4 or 5 years old. And we moved to Mitchell, South Dakota, where I started school. And then my father was a lumberman, and he was with Weyerhaeuser Lumber. And he had 7 or 8 yards that he ran for the Weyerhaeusers here in Billings. And politics.
You arrived here in Billings at an early age then?
Yeah. I was about 9 or 10 when we came to Billings. And I've been here on and off since then. when Al Smith came through in that 1927-1928 campaign, when he came through the town, there Billings had a they had a Ku Klux Klan in Billings. I went to a parochial school, and they let us, the Klan marched during that campaign, and on the St. Patrick's Church there were three doors and a great big red K on each door.
The Ku Klux Klan people painted red K's on the doors of the Catholic Church?
Right. We were let out of school to go over there, and everybody got a taste of it, and we used turpentine and wiped those doors clean. And that may have been my introduction to politics, although my family were Republicans, my father was, and my mother, yeah, she was too.
But you were raised a Catholic.
I was raised a Catholic.
And both your mom and dad were Catholics?
Oh, yeah. And I was, after the war, I ran for the legislature in the 46, yeah.
But before we leave, Jack, before we leave that Ku Klux Klan incident, obviously, you as a Catholic, you felt deeply offended by that K.
Yeah.
On the church doors. Was that done when Al Smith came to Billings?
I don't know. I can't remember whether they just did it in opposition.
Because, of course, Smith was a Catholic.
Was a Catholic.
So there was a somewhat of a connection that
right,
way.
Right, right.
So that impressed you, that's your first real memory of anything political.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
And then we just blithely went through high school and so on, and then in 19...
Do you remember that your parents supported Smith even though your dad was a Republican because he was a Catholic?
I don't remember. I would have a sneaking hunch that, that my mother, who was Irish, probably sneaked a vote in there, maybe. But then I, the war was over in 46, let's see.
You served in World War II in 40?
Yeah.
Yeah. In Europe?
No, I was in the Marine Corps.
I see.
And spent 4 years and got out fairly early. The Pacific.
Yeah.
I was at Midway and Marshall Islands, and then...
You were in the Navy in Midway, the Battle of Midway?
No, there wasn't
any... Oh, the Marine Corps, yes.
The Marine Corps, yeah. And there wasn't any battle there.
It was after the big Battle of Midway.
They didn't, and that was a sea battle.
Yes, right, yeah.
And I came immediately after that.
I got you.
And... then I went to Marshall Islands after that, and I came home. I was gone 26 months.
I see.
And came home and had orders back to the Pacific and on my leave, and I got an order to report to the Charleston Navy Yard, which was like heaven. I didn't want to go back out there anymore.
Yeah, sure.
And I lost a brother at Iwo Jima. After I was back, I leaped ahead somewhere there.
Well, you said then you'd arrive back here right after the war.
Well, yeah, I ran for the legislature.
In 1946, apparently.
Yeah, and I'd just gotten out. This was running for the 46 legislature, and 47.
Well, the election was in 46 for a session.
Yeah,
it would have
yeah. Election was in 46, and I was back practicing law, trying to practice law, and I was running for attorney at law as much as anything, just to get known around.
Sure. Yeah.
And I was the first Roman Catholic who ever got elected to anything in Yellowstone County.
Huh.
It was that bad in this county.
Wow.
But in that election, I came within 200 votes of getting elected, to the surprise of everybody.
Huh.
And
how was it known you were a Catholic?
oh, this town only
people
had...
People paid attention to that.
Yeah, they only had 20,000 people, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'd gone to the parochial schools. They didn't have a high school at that time, but yeah. I played football and basketball at Billings High, which was the only high school. I was just generally known as a Catholic,
sure.
And the family was.
Why do you think that would make any difference to anybody? It hasn't so much in my generation, but it apparently meant more then, because you said, as far as you know, there was no Catholic ever elected to any office until you were in.
I don't think there ever was.
Well, I wonder why.
They didn't trust Catholics to be in political office. And I came close then that time.
Yeah.
And so for that next election, Bill Jamison suggested that I might run again.
Was he a prominent Republican leader here in the Yellowstone?
He was Mr. Republican.
I see.
And he was a lobbyist for the Montana Power Company. And so I ran that second time and got elected.
That was in 1950?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I got elected then. And Bill, he never asked me for a vote. I was coming along pretty good politically, and I think they were encouraging me. He never asked me for anything to vote about, because he knew I probably wasn't going to agree with him entirely. Nobody put any money in my campaign. And, I spent maybe $100 getting elected. Those were different days.
Yeah.
And since then, all kinds of guys have been elected.
A lot of Catholics, yeah.
Yeah, my partner John G. was very prominent.
Yeah.
You knew he was my partner.
I didn't find that out.
Married to my sister. And he went to the legislature, went to the Senate, and went to the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
But after I'd gone.
Well, Jack, when you first arrived at the legislature in 1951, you were a relatively young man, probably, what, 30 years old? And so, and this is a big experience for a young man to have, but do you remember any impressions as you started out in the legislature? Maybe what you thought when you first arrived there, what you saw in your first weeks there, that kind of, sometimes the first impression can be a lasting one.
Yeah.
What were your impressions, your early impressions of the Montana legislature?
Well, I very early became aware, because they went out and made an issue of it, of the Anaconda Company and the Power Company.
Who made an issue of it?
Well, they just made themselves known,
okay,
as lobbyists.
Yeah.
And they had a very nice open bar every day, both of them. Bill Jamison never had his first drink, but he had a bar.
Uh-huh.
And Jim Hoy was his amanuensis to work on that legislature.
I see.
And they had a... And
and of course, Jim Hoy went on to be a legislator himself.
Yeah, later.
Yeah.
It always surprised me, because but we all knew what camp he was in, you know.
Yeah.
But that was some years later.
Mm-hmm.
He just died.
Yeah, I saw that. I think he's pretty
well. They were good friends.
Yeah.
Anyway, early on, they probably invited me to come by and get acquainted with the other guys, and they served a cocktail, and I'd have a cocktail with them, and then I'd get out and go have one with Bill Jamison and get to know. So you got to know the people that
way. Sure, that's right. So those were called watering holes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And do you remember, were there Democrats as well as Republicans at the watering holes?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Everybody went.
Yeah.
Leo Graybill probably didn't go, but almost everybody.
Because Leo Graybill had a reputation for being what?
He was as dry as Bill Jameson was.
I see.
But he was a kind of Democrat who wouldn't have mingled at all.
I see.
Now, this is the senior.
Yes, yeah. I do, yeah. So, just to jump back for just a minute, do you remember if you had, who were the lobbyists? Let me ask you first, do you remember who the lobbyists were for the Anaconda Company?
I can't quite say that.
Did a guy named Wilkinson ring a bell?
Al Wilkinson was their chief lobbyist.
Yeah.
And a hell of a nice guy.
Yeah.
Or he wouldn't have had that job.
Sure, yeah.
And, he was the head lobbyist. But
Lloyd Crippen, was he in the picture then?
He was in the picture, but he wouldn't.
Yeah.
He doesn't stick in my mind.
Yeah. I think he came later, actually.
I don't know.
But do you remember anybody but besides Wilkinson?
I know he had a staff of about 4 or 5.
When you first ran, you mentioned Bill Jameson encouraged you to run. Do you remember anybody else connected with the big corporations, with Montana or Anaconda Company, that maybe was helpful to you when you were running for the legislature, gave you encouragement, maybe even came over here to Billings, met with other legislators, that type of thing? No. Do you remember that going on?
No. I was just sort of completely on my own.
Did Jameson, did the Montana Power Company and the Anaconda Company seem to work together during that period of time?
I think they probably did. Bill Jameson was, now that I think about it, he was a lobbyist for the railroad.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. But he might also have had a connection with Montana Power Company, or was it the railroads?
Well, they weren't enemies, let's say.
Yeah.
And they understood each other, and they probably compared notes every now and then.
Yeah, yeah.
But if they did, we weren't privy to it.
Yeah. So it was a kind of a social thing to gather at the watering holes, the Railroad Association watering hole, Bill Jameson's or the Anaconda Company watering holes, and lots of Republicans and lots of Democrats did that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, almost all of them. And you met everybody there.
Yeah.
But the corks went in the bottle at a certain time. 5 o'clock, say, or six, I don't know when the hour was, but it was a formalized time from the last gavel on that day until, say, 6 o'clock or 4:30 or 5:30 or some such time.
Didn't stay open late.
No.
Yeah.
And they got a pretty good fix on people, you know, a little hooch. I never had more than one drink at either place. I had a guy named Roy Hansen, and I got to be good friends there from Miles City.
Roy Hansen was a legislator from Miles City?
Mm-hmm.
I see.
And a couple others, I suppose. But I wasn't awfully thick in that.
What do you suppose the Anaconda Company accomplished by those things? Did they do any particular lobbying?
Oh yeah.
They did.
Uh-huh. And they had legislators, for example, George O'Connor, prominent, extremely able, and even known to be in their camp.
Uh-huh.
He was the House.
Mm-hmm.
Came from Red Lodge.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with him at all?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And he was probably unbelievable the way he could speak. He'd never been near a college and was terribly knowledgeable about Montana government.
Yeah.
You just couldn't escape liking him.
Yeah.
And he would probably keep an eye on me to see what I was doing. I don't know. being good friends.
But it was common knowledge in the legislature that he was close to the Anaconda Company and the Montana Power Company.
Yeah. It was well known by everybody. And he was, in effect, a lobbyist, really.
Were there others?
You know, I can't think of them right now, but well, guys like won't come to me. If he could suggest a name or two. Who was my second session? Who was the governor? The Swede.
Aronson.
Swede.
Oh, yeah, the big Swede, yeah. Like Ori Armstrong?
Oh, yeah.
You remember Ori?
Yeah, Ori was in their pocket. Joe was.
Joe McElwain was?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You say that in a kind of a negative way when you say that they're in their pocket, do you mean that in any particular way?
Well, I don't know if they got money for it or not. No way of knowing that.
Yeah, and I guess I wasn't really heading in that direction, but it was, you know, you mentioned that George O'Connor was close to him and worked with him, and he was practically a lobbyist for him.
Yeah.
But that, I don't know if there was any people, you know, were critical of them for that or not, but.
No.
Cedar Arano?
Well, he was a Democrat.
Yeah. But that wouldn't necessarily mean he might not be close to the Anaconda Company.
No, that didn't have anything to do with it.
Yeah.
You ever seen all these guys for the first time for a long time?
Alex Blewett?
Alex was, no.
He wasn't particularly close to them.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Bradley.
Jack Brenner?
Jack Brenner was close to him.
He was close to him.
Yeah.
Ben Brownfield?
No. Ben wasn't much of a force. This guy was a freshman when I was.
Christ. Yeah.
Bob Dwyer. Well, Bob was a lawyer and was pretty close to the Anaconda Company, ought to be.
And Democrat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And.
Leonard Esp?
Leonard wasn't much of a force. I mean, he would have been close to them.
Yeah.
And Ralph knew that world.
Ralph Gebhardt?
Yeah, he was a railroad man. And he would have been awfully close to Bill Jamison.
A Republican?
Yeah.
Cliff Haynes?
I don't remember much about Cliff.
Clyde Hawks?
Well, he was there, but I'm not a force. Well, let me see who this is. No.
John Luthold?
No, he was just another guy, fairly well important around there. And Hank.
Henry Lobel?
Yeah, he was a Democrat. And Hank, I don't think he was independent very much.
I see. He went to work as a lobbyist, I believe, for the Montana Dakota Utilities Company.
Right? Yeah, that's right.
John McDonald later became Speaker of the House.
Yeah, and it surprised me, too, when he became Speaker. I didn't remember. I was out of there then.
This guy, Dan McCarthy?
No, he's a nice guy. Bill McKay was a nice guy. He was well, McKay was well enough off, so he didn't have to ask anybody for any favors. He was an old family.
Yeah.
Some of these guys I can see.
There's George O'Connor.
There's George, yeah, he was right. And he'd been speaker 2 or 3 times.
Yeah. Sonny Olmholt.
Don't remember much about Sonny. I liked him. I liked all these guys, really. Some of them I saw more than others. Carl Peters, he'd have played the game for the company.
He was a Republican from Yellowstone?
Yeah, yeah, from Yellowstone, yeah. He was a result.
George Pierce?
Yeah.
When you say that, he just didn't take the job seriously?
Well, I think he probably... No, I don't think he took it seriously.
Yeah.
I don't think he knew too much about what was going on. this guy either.
Louis Prill?
Yeah. And Purdy.
Lowell Purdy from Bozeman.
Yeah, when he came out of the Sweet Grass Hills, out of Shelby area.
Did you know Bess Reed at all?
Yeah, I knew Bess. We just kind of laughed about Bess. We corrected her grammar every now and then.
She was a Republican from Missoula.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this was a Republican era.
Yeah.
And Sales was fairly active. I don't know.
Walter Sales from Bozeman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Charlie Schofield.
Well, he'd been speaker at some time.
Yeah. Pretty prominent guy.
No, he's pretty quiet.
Yeah.
After that. Myron Tripp was a professor. He was on his own pretty much.
Democrat, right?
Yeah, and he was a professor at the. Eastern.
Yeah.
But he was on his own, and he was a thinker. That's about it. They all come back, though.
You remember, of course, Dean Chaffin?
Oh, yeah.
Was he close to the Anaconda Company?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He was the Speaker of the House, of course.
Yeah. Well.
You remember, how about Tim Babcock?
Well, Tim was brand new, and he was a nice guy. He wasn't a heavyweight. I'm surprised he got to be governor.
Yeah. Didn't play a real large role in the legislature.
No, I don't remember.
How about Lord Lloyd Bernard?
Yeah, I don't remember much about him, though.
Farmers Union guy, I think, probably.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Would the Farmers Union guys have been the ones least likely to find at the Anaconda Company watering hole?
Right.
That was. They were the ones that really were the
yeah.
the most populist kind of Democrats, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they bore the label on their back, practically.
So yeah. Fred Barrett would probably have been in that camp.
Yeah, Fred was a little more liberal than that. Not quite so doctrinaire.
Uh-huh.
Broder, I don't remember much about him.
Fred Broder is up in my country, of course.
Is he?
Yeah. John Kavanaugh, a Butte Democrat.
Yeah.
Mervyn Dempsey, do you remember anything about him?
I wouldn't. He was a company guy.
Yeah. A company Democrat.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why do you remember that about him?
Wasn't a heavyweight.
But when I said his name, you said he was a company guy. Is there something that made you think that?
I just knew he was in the bucket for them.
Knew he was in the what for
them? In the bucket, I said.
Oh, in the bucket for
yeah.
them. Yeah. That just seemed commonly known.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was his livelihood.
He worked for him, huh?
Yeah. A miner.
Yeah.
Bob Dwyer, he was pretty independent, I think.
But a Democrat?
He's a Democrat.
Yeah.
And Ralph Gebhardt.
Ralph Gebhardt was a legislator from here in Billings, a Republican.
Yeah, and he was a rail.
A railroader, huh?
Uh-huh. And he probably had the first and last drink every day.
He drank a lot and tended to go along with Bill Jameson.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's Leo Graybill, of course.
Yeah, yeah. And he was a kind of an acerbic guy. He's hard to get along with.
Acerbic.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Is he the same guy that went on to be the president of the CONCON?
That was his son.
It was his son. Okay, I got you. Okay.
And he came out of the same mold.
Also a little acerbic, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Quite a lot more.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. I had trouble getting along with him in the CONCON. This is the second session.
Yeah, this is your 53 session, yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. I forgot about that guy.
Rudy Johnson, what about him?
Didn't amount to much that I remember.
From Butte?
Yeah. He probably wasn't a company guy, though, but I think he just put in time.
Remember Rudy Judeman?
Oh, yeah, I remember Rudy well.
About Rudy?
Shelby, he was a force. He kind of had that look about him.
He went on to be the minority leader, I think. Yeah. Would he have been close to Montana Power and the Anaconda Company?
I don't think so.
Not particularly?
Uh-uh.
Yeah.
I'd be a little surprised.
Yeah.
Joe again.
Joe McElwain, yeah.
Yeah, he was totally company.
Yeah.
Mm. Old friend of mine, law school. We finished law school at the same time. George again.
Yeah, George O'Connor.
Carl Peters was a company guy.
Republican from here in Billings.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And old Bess, I think we just about covered.
Yeah, I think so.
I got along well with all these people, but I had reservations about some of them.
When you were there, do you remember being lobbied by the Anaconda Company or the Montana Power Company lobbyists particularly?
It weren't that obvious. they pretty well knew who I was and what I was going to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, what did they want? We hear that,
they just wanted status quo.
Okay.
That's the best I can say.
So it might not have been that difficult. You might have voted along with them a fair number of times. There was probably a lot of legislation they didn't take a position on at all, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a lot of stuff. It was hard to know status quo was what they were looking for. They didn't want any major changes.
Okay.
And they were able to, tax wise and all that, they had that pretty well figured out.
Yeah, okay. Would you describe them as paternalistic, not necessarily bad, just kind of a big influence? Or would you describe them as tyrants who were in it for themselves at the expense of everybody else?
I'd say they're apparently paternalistic, but they, in their private meetings, they were probably sorting us all out and putting us in categories as good, bad, and indifferent, you know.
Yeah. Did you feel a controlling influence on their part when you were there? Did you feel as though the legislature was controlled by the big corporations, by Anaconda and Montana Power?
Yeah, I thought that. Uh-huh. I thought that.
I'm curious to know how they did that. I mean,
this is pretty subtle, because it came from a long, when I got there, they'd been doing this stuff for many, many years.
Yeah.
And they were, for example, the captive press, as I called it in that article, they never said anything bad about anybody in their newspaper.
Yeah.
And that was pretty typical of how they operated.
How would you, because obviously they had important influence, major influence in the legislature, how would you describe how Montana was governed during that period when they had great influence?
Well, they usually had the governor in their pocket, and that didn't make much difference except for signing bills and not signing other bills.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they did a pretty good job of running a government. I may have said that. they had everything going the way they wanted it to go, and they just kept it that way. It was a pretty dull state. Nothing very.
But in terms of decent highways, university system, that sort of thing, they didn't stand in the way of any of that.
No.
They maybe even encouraged some of that. I don't know.
Oh yeah, they would. I mean, they'd encourage the university, and they probably. Well, I don't think they had anything to do with who were hired. Well, see, Mike Mansfield, for example, he was my advisor at the university. And Mike, I don't think, was near the senator he had that Lee Metcalf was. Of course, I was liberal by then. And, I was always basically pretty liberal. and they didn't trust Lee very much.
But they did Mike Mansfield?
Oh, yeah.
The Anaconda Company had a close relationship with Mike Mansfield?
Yeah, I would think so.
Why do you think so?
Just the way he performed as a senator. he was middle of the road all the way.
Yeah.
Everybody loved Mike, but he didn't make any enemies.
Yeah.
He was probably the last... last guy in the Senate that wasn't strongly Democrat or Republican, either one.
Yeah. Which is kind of how the Anaconda Company operated.
Yeah.
It's kind of the status quo and not strong in one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What caused you to, you mentioned you were always somewhat liberal, and there were other Republicans, I'm sure, when you started out in the legislature who might be described as like you.
Mm-hmm.
What caused you to become more liberal and decide to become a Democrat?
I ran for the Supreme Court. And I would go to, I traveled the state, and I ran for the court on the platform that I would not take any money from any contributions from any lawyers, because I wasn't going to be sitting on the court being bound by somebody's contribution to my campaign. And I needless to say, didn't get elected. But I would go.
Who beat you?
Hatfield.
Paul Hatfield.
And we were classmates. I liked the guy. I didn't ever say anything bad about him. I thought he was probably a company man.
Yeah.
But when I ran for the court, I would go to all these Republican meetings or Democratic meetings. You know, it was an election year. Yeah. And they'd have a powwow in this town, and I'd make a point of going there. And they never, and the Republicans, never let me say a word. They never introduced me even.
Huh.
Never even introduced me.
Huh.
And God, I'd go to the Democrat meetings, and they loved me. So I just said, hell, if that's the way it is, that's the way I am.
Huh.
And so nobody made a big issue of it. I just said I ran for the CONCON as a Democrat. And Lee Metcalf, the only one who ever recognized, he said, Jack wasn't fooling, was he?
He said what?
Well, I went to the final Democratic meeting here in Billings, and I got introduced and asked to speak. And I did that, and I said, ich bin ein Democrat. Yeah, I incorporated that into what little speech I made. And the treatment I'd gotten from the Republicans. So I said, from here on out, I'm a Democrat.
What did you say Metcalf said about you?
Well, he came to the CONCON to talk to us.
Yeah.
And he said, Jack wasn't fooling.
Jack wasn't fooling.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
Jack, what do you remember about Eisenhower? Might your brand of republicanism, might it have been more compatible with Eisenhower's maybe than with the Republicans who followed?
I never thought Eisenhower was much of a president.
I see.
I wouldn't too serious about it one way or another.
I see, okay.
In fact, I thought the best president we had for a long time, even when I was a Republican, was Harry Truman.
Uh-huh. But the Republican Party changed somewhat when Barry Goldwater surfaced, and then later on when Ronald Reagan surfaced.
Yeah.
And there are some people who say they can see some consistency between the party of Lincoln and Theodore Roosevelt and Herbert Hoover up through and including Eisenhower and maybe President Ford. And then after that, it kind of goes off in a different direction. And I just thought, you know, maybe if you had perceived that, that you were more comfortable running in the Republican Party that was that Republican Party than by 1972 when you ran for the CONCON, you know, because
yeah.
Then the Republican Party had become a good deal more conservative, I think, than it was when you first
yeah.
ran for the legislature.
Yeah, they did they did a great thing in the CONCON. And it wasn't Graybill's idea, although he implemented it. They seated us alphabetically. It made all the difference in the world. There are people there I can't tell you today whether they're Democrat or Republican. Unique.
Very good. Yeah, very good. Yeah, it was a good idea.
because they were all good people. And the legislature people were all pretty good people, too. When you think of it, God, $10 a day. And it cost me $4 a day to stay at the Montana Club, and that was the cheapest place in town.
That's when you were a legislator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had $6 left over.
Yeah. Jack, before we get away from your years in the legislature, just a couple more questions. Do you have any recollections about the Farmers Union during that period?
Yeah,
were they a force? Do you remember people?
Yeah,
do you remember any incidents or anything?
They were a force, and they were quite a strong force. And there were people who weren't farmers that belonged to the Farmers Union and followed their ideas. And I didn't subscribe to them any more than I subscribed to the Anaconda Company. I was about as middle as you could get. I was, hesitate to speak out about these things. But the Farmers Union was not easy to like.
Why is that?
Well, they just came on a little stronger than the ordinary Democrat.
Radical, is that a radical, term? Is that a fair radical. Term?
Good term, yeah.
Okay. How about the FFL-CIO?
They didn't make much noise. I got along well with them. In fact, I had clients, AFL-CIO people.
The teachers, school teachers?
They were one-shot legislators, their legislation. They would appear on a week and make themselves known when some of their stuff was up.
Yeah.
But otherwise, they didn't weren't generally interested in the politics.
Was there, in your two sessions in the legislature in 51 and 53, do you have a recollection of any important bill, any important piece of legislation that stands out in your memory?
Well, there's one that stands out that branded me a liberal. You know. We had a miscegenous marriage law in Montana. That was my second session, and it always rankled with me. I came along, and I was the only guy. I introduced the bill and put it through, and most people didn't even know it was there. So I got it through the House and the Senate. I had to do a little lobbying over in the Senate. By then, Hugo is, this is kind of a fun story. By then, Hugo was governor. And so the bill got passed and was ready for his signature. And he called me down to his office. He said, Jack, was this Miskinus?
This what?
This Miskinus. And I said, well, that I called him Hugo, I think. I said, that's takes away the prohibition against people of different races marrying each other.
Because until then, it was against the law in Montana for a white person to marry a black person,
yeah.
Or perhaps a white person to marry an Indian, I don't know.
Yeah, I think they were a little leery about Indians, but...
Yeah.
Hugo said, Yak, I sign. And he signed.
Well, good.
And what I knew was that he was married to a French woman.
Oh, sure.
And that kind of was in his mind, too.
What's the term again?
Miscegenous.
Miscegenous. Hmm. And so, how do you use it?
Well, it's interracial marriages, really.
So a miscegenous marriage would be an interracial marriage.
Yeah.
And you repealed that with your bill.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I see.
So I had kind of fun, and I took some pride in having done that.
Well, good.
But outstanding legislation, I wasn't any.
During that period, I guess I, yeah. Yeah.
Things just went along, and people, well, they were generally against taxes and
yeah.
That sort of thing. The companies stood out. It'd have to be pretty strong for them to interfere. They were present, we all knew they existed, but they were watchdogs.
Yeah. And if things were generally going their way, they just let them go, huh?
Well, they probably got their own people that they could count on to go against them if they wanted.
Yeah.
If they were against something.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you ever remember being having Mr. Wilkinson or anybody, you know, come and have a chat with you about a piece of legislation or anything like that?
No, they knew better on my case. They didn't bother. Bill Jamison came around once and said, "Jack, I know you wouldn't have a problem with going for this bill." And it was something I didn't have a problem with.
Yeah.
And so he asked me to vote for it.
Yeah.
That's about the only time anybody ever...
But you might have a little powwow with Joe McElwain or somebody like that. Legislators talking to each other.
Yeah, well, I'd probably tell Mac that he was totally owned or something.
I mean, maybe he's not a good example, I don't know. But
no,
I mean,
good guy.
What I thought I heard you saying was that maybe some of those guys that were close to the Anaconda Company might even have gotten together from time to time independently, and somebody might have said, "Well, you know, just to make sure we're on the safe side here, we don't think there's a problem with this bill, but George, will you talk to Jack Schiltz, and Joe, maybe you could talk to Peters."
That might have happened.
You never even knew that you were being lobbied. That could have happened.
Yeah.
Maybe, huh?
Yeah, it didn't happen with me so far as I know. I was pretty well aware of where the sides were.
There was I've been told by a longtime lobbyist that from time to time the legislators who were especially close to the Anaconda Company would get together, two or three times a week, usually in the evening, perhaps over dinner, and they'd talk a little bit about the legislation that was in the important committees and, you know, just how the legislative session was progressing, and kind of monitor the session that way.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, but you're not specifically aware of that?
No.
Okay. He referred to it as the school. He said some of these guys were in what they called the school, and he kind of joked about it.
I never heard that.
But you had never heard that?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, the school.
Doesn't ring a bell, huh?
No. Okay. But the place then where people would get together usually was the Montana Club, of course. And you'd see a table that had six people in it that probably talking politics.
Mm-hmm. And they could be lobbyists and legislators and so forth.
Yeah. But the lobbyists, Al Wilkinson and those guys were never seen socially with legislators. It would be too obvious. They did their stuff quietly.
Mm-hmm. So this behind-the-scenes meeting would have been the most likely way that Al Wilkinson would have sat down with George O'Connor.
Right. Yeah. And George might have joined him. As soon as they put the corks back in the bottle, they had a meeting every single day.
Well, that's what I'm talking about, I think, Jack. I think that's what I'm talking about. Uh-huh. This guy said, usually at the end of the day, after the watering hole was closed down, a few of the key lobbyists would get together with a few of the key legislators, both in the Senate and the House, both Democrats and Republicans, and they'd talk over where they were. And
oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You had heard that did happen?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because you didn't even see those guys after the corks were in.
Yeah.
You
didn't see which guys?
The Anaconda people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I can't remember all those guys. I remember Al so much that I wouldn't be surprised.
Billy Ray?
Oh, Billy Ray, yeah.
Was he one, I think? I remember that name. Denny Shea, Billy Ray.
I remember the name Denny Shea, but I don't remember.
Yeah.
Billy Ray, I remember.
He was an Anaconda Company lobbyist,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, and his daughter was in college with us.
I see.
And I knew her quite well.
What do you remember about Governor Nutter? Anything? You were out of the legislature by then.
Mm-hmm.
But do you have any recollections of him?
None of the governors were impressive. None of them. The most impressive governor is one that I just found here when I came back from my last outing in Texas.
Who's that?
Well, the current governor.
Oh, I see.
He's the most activist governor that I remember.
Oh, yeah, you bet, yeah. High profile.
Oh.
What do you remember about Bonner? Anything? Governor Bonner was governor when you were there in 51.
Yeah, he was pretty heavy in the bottles.
He had that incident down at the governor's conference, of course.
Yeah.
Did you ever meet him?
Oh, yeah.
Describe him.
Affable Irishman. Very nice guy, really.
Impressive public speaker?
No, I don't remember that.
Yeah. And then you mentioned Governor Aronson. You felt you were on a first-name basis with him.
Well, he was a senator while I was in my first session.
Yeah.
And then he ran for governor my second. And I also knew him from Shelby.
I see.
Because Sweetgrass Hills in Shelby, and I had relatives in Shelby.
Yeah.
I liked him.
Yeah.
Nice guy.
Most everybody liked him, I think. And how would you regard his relationship with the Anaconda Company?
He wasn't going to do anything to hurt him.
Yeah. Did you know Babcock?
Mm-hmm.
You did a little bit as a legislator, I know.
Yeah, I knew him as a legislator. considered him a highwayman.
Trucker.
Trucker, yeah. I was surprised he... and he was a good guy, though.
Yeah.
But get me right. Now, I didn't find an impressive governor until this last one. For being an active governor.
Uh-huh. Well, Forrest Anderson, there were some important things accomplished during his administration, including the 1972 Constitution,
yeah,
and executive reorganization and that sort, yeah, of thing. So he was a governor that accomplished quite a bit.
Yeah.
But maybe not as high a profile.
No, that's right.
Did you ever remember meeting him?
Oh, sure.
What do you remember about Governor Anderson?
Not much. An attractive guy.
Yeah.
But, see, I was gone a lot of the time. After, right after the Constitutional Convention, I was out of Montana. I moved to Texas, where I spent about 5 years with the Brown and Root family, if that means anything to you.
Big construction company.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was never a Root, it was just Brown. And I worked for that family on a corporation they had separate from the construction. And then I went back. I stayed with them 5 years and wanted to get back to the active practice. And I went to Kalispell.
Oh, you did?
Uh-huh. And I was with...
Murphy Robinson?
With whom?
Murphy and Robinson?
No, I wasn't with them. I was with the guy who was in the legislature. I can't say his name right now.
Dale McGarvey?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I went with Dale. And I was there for a couple of years, and I got a call from Texas, and the governor's assistant asked me if I'd take on the Howard Hughes case. And so I became a special assistant to the Attorney General. And did the Howard Hughes case.
What do you mean, did the Howard Hughes case?
Well, there was a dispute among three states, California, Nevada, and Texas, over his domicile when he died. And that meant who got to tax his,
yeah,
estate. And it was in the Supreme Court of the United States, the case was, because it was a dispute among three states.
Right.
Yeah, that was pretty prestigious thing to get.
So you represented who?
Texas.
Represented Texas, mm-hmm, in that dispute.
Yeah.
Did you get to argue in the Supreme Court?
Oh, yeah.
Huh?
A member of the Supreme Court? The bar?
No. But when you were involved in that, did you actually...
No, they had...
an oral argument before the U.S.
No,
Supreme Court?
No, they had a special... just one layer under the Supreme Court,
Appeals Court?
Federal Appeals Court. The judge, the black judge out of Michigan. And he was the judge, didn't see much of him. We took depositions all over the United States. And finally hit an impasse and we settled the case. And I got $50 million for Texas.
Wow.
And the reason I had represented Indian tribes.
I see.
And I wasn't afraid of big dollars. I got, for Indian tribes, I could get them $20 million here and there, a couple million someplace else. So that's how I had to get that, because I wasn't afraid of the size.
Well, that's exciting. Mm-hmm. That's great. That's exciting. Mm-hmm. We've talked some about the Constitutional Convention. There are a couple of more names I want to run past you, though. Did you ever meet Wellington Rankin?
The old man?
Yeah. Old Wellington Rankin, the old attorney?
I knew his wife, you know. She was a
Louise.
Louise was a classmate.
I see.
And a little behind me. But, yeah. And there weren't many girl lawyers.
Yeah.
I guess I didn't meet Wellington.
So you wouldn't have an impression of him. Orvin Fiore.
Sure, I knew him. Big timber, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I wasn't carried away with him.
No clear impression.
No major.
Wes Dewart?
Wes I knew, and he was also a Bill Jamison man. They were practically in bed together. I met him, yeah.
Yeah.
But I wasn't friendly with him or anything. He was older, quite a bit older.
But you would have regarded him as a sort of a Anaconda Company loyalist and a part of the structure that way?
Yeah, more railroad than Anaconda.
I see. How about Arnold Olson?
Arnold, I liked Arnold, but I never had a lot to do with him.
He was Attorney General, of course, during the 1950s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Any impression of him as Attorney General?
No, not one way or another.
Forrest Anderson?
Well, he did get involved in slot machines and stuff. Yeah,
along with Louise Replogle Galt.
Yeah.
So that's probably your most important impression of him. Mm-hmm. Forrest Anderson as Attorney General, any thoughts or impressions? And then you mentioned that you ran for the Supreme Court, and that experience caused you to decide when you ran for the CONCON to be a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
Did Skeff Sheehy have any influence on that?
No. He and I never, we're partners, you know.
Yeah.
But he did his thing, I did mine.
You mentioned in your experience in the CONCON that the alphabetical seating was a good idea.
Yeah.
Are there any other lasting impressions in the CONCON? If I asked you to just describe the CONCON and your thoughts about it, how would you do that?
I'd say it was highly motivated, favorably highly motivated. People forgot their politics pretty much. We had some people quite prominent. You probably run across Maine Ann Robinson at some time or another. And she was a force.
Yeah.
The girl from Great Falls was a force, I guess.
Arlene Reichert?
Arlene.
Yeah.
Two women. I was a force. I had an interesting thing. I was chairman of the Style and Drafting Committee, and I had good people, Jim Garlington and Ben Berg and a guy from Butte was good. and I don't know if you know, a bill would come to the committee, and it would go immediately to my committee, and I had a fellow named Gardner Cromwell. You know Gardner?
Yeah.
And he was a rough guy, but he and I just hit it off beautifully. Somebody'd come to him and want something, he'd say, "You got to talk to Jack Shelton, not me." He was that kind of guy.
Uh-huh.
And he and I, you know, this was the biggest job in the convention, if you want to hear about it.
Yeah.
Okay. I call it a bill, but it was a proposed article. And the chairman of that committee would finish off his work, and that turned out to be the agriculture committee first. Anyway, they would send it down to us, and Gardner and I would make a workable bill out of what they had. Or make whatever corrections we thought of, or whatever indistinctions it had. And we'd do that in the evening. And he'd make a first rough draft, and he and I'd work on it. And the next morning, for day after day at 7 o'clock, we met in a committee. And it was a good committee. And we red marked things, blue marked them, did whatever. And then I took them to the floor and presented the changes that we had put on. And then I'd make them, something that wasn't clear, I'd say, "What do you mean by this, committee?" And they would answer and tell me what they meant by it. And then I would take it back and, sometimes I didn't have to, a lot of the bills, bills I call, but a lot of the articles had been borrowed from other states, which I didn't know until later. But we changed them, and this thing looked like we had one author in the whole damn thing. Not me, but just a single author. And so I was busy day and night on this thing. And these people, when they were through with their article, hell, they'd go out and drink whiskey or do whatever they wanted to do, because they were through with their work.
But you had to reconcile the whole thing in a stylistic consistency to make it all come together, right?
Right. Yeah. And we did that, with that committee, we did that every blessed day. First, we did get a nice start. I forgot who that guy was. He was from Arlington, he had the agricultural committee. And we cut his thing to ribbons and rewrote it completely. And he said, "I wouldn't have thought that anybody could have done a better job of our deathless prose than you did, but I compliment the committee on what they've done."
Oh, well, good.
And it was downhill from then on.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Because mm-hmm. some people don't always want you to monkey with their prose.
No. Yeah, and then I served on the Judiciary Committee as well, but anyway, that was that.
You mentioned Graybill.
Graybill?
Yeah. Leo Graybill, the president of the convention.
Yeah, he and I ran for president. Yeah, and I was a novice, I guess, in that world, because Graybill knew what he was doing. And he he got about three committees and named and guaranteed them chairmanships, maybe more than that. And he won rather handily. and I'm glad he did, because I enjoyed that style of drafting.
Yeah.
I consider that pretty much my baby.
You mentioned too, Jack, that you felt you used the term acerbic to describe Leo Graybill's leadership style.
Yeah, well, he was careful not to show it too much. Toward the end of the thing, I managed to get along with him, and I admired his work. He never debated anything. He sat in the chair. And once in a while, he'd have me or somebody take the chair while he took the floor and commented on something.
Were you the president pro tem of the CONCON?
No.
Oh.
I don't know who that was. Probably, I don't know.
How important, because the 1972 Constitution is an important document, obviously, and it was a major accomplishment when you consider all the changes and so on that it made. Do you realize how difficult it is sometimes now for a legislative body to even accomplish a small controversial task?
And we passed it by half of 1%.
Yeah, it was close, I know. But it was a pretty major achievement. I think most people would agree with that.
I think it was, too.
Well, then, how important was Graybill to the accomplishment of that?
He had a major part. Well, he ran it without too much interference. The only interference I ever had was, to me, personally, when he, toward the end, he wanted to get the thing over with. And he said, I want that finished document on my desk, blah, a certain day.
Yeah.
And I said, Leo, you'll get it when we're through with it. And that's as acerb as we got to with each other. But he would make offhand comments from the chair and stuff that were on the acerb side. But they weren't terribly mean. And I respected him.
Yeah.
He did a good job.
As you look back over the course of your life, you've been someone who's been an actively involved man, who's been active as a lawyer, also in your community, I presume in your church, and you have served in the legislature, you ran for the Supreme Court, you served as a CONCON delegate. From all those experiences, is there any kind of an identifiable theme that you see coursing through Montana history in the last 60 years? If you had to kind of...
You mean that I had something to do?
No, just what you've observed. What have you seen over 60 years of watching Montana? Is there some perceptible change that's taken place? Is there something that's kind of been a constant thing?
Well, I've been out of the state, you know,
for
quite a few years, until just the last year, so 2-3 years. But I would say things are better than they were. They got rid of their papers, for one thing.
The Anaconda Company got rid of its newspaper.
Yeah, and the papers are free. I don't know if... they're actually better.
They're more independent?
Yeah, yeah. And I think that was a major, getting the papers away from the company. I got that in there somewhere.
Your article, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't so much they're taking an active role in things as they're taking a hands-off role in things.
Mm-hmm.
And when they got rid of that, I think the state has improved with the debate, active debate.
How about the economy of the state?
Well, it just kind of followed. I think the economy's far better than it was. Of course, I grew up in the Depression, you know.
Yeah.
And I think economically the state's doing very well. And well, they've got surpluses that they don't know what to do with.
So,
and this governor, I think, is an active governor. I don't know if everybody thinks so, but I think he's the best governor I've encountered.
You're talking about Governor Schweitzer.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you see as you look into Montana's future?
Well, I'd hate to see it get much bigger.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think the future promises to be rather good.
You're optimistic about the future?
Well, of course, I'm almost 90 years old. I don't know what I'm looking forward to.
Is there anything else that you'd like to say in conclusion? Anything that I maybe missed that should have asked you about? Or
no, I don't think so.
Well, sure appreciate it, Jack. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I don't know what else we can talk about.
Okay, well then we'll cut her off here.